Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I am so glad you've joined us today. I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop, and I'm your host today. And today our topic is celebrating foster and adoptive families, and that's in honor of April being Child Prevention Awareness Month. And I've invited an expert to join us for today's discussion. But before I introduce her, this is actually a special show for foster parents, and I need to give a few quick instructions to any foster parents who are listening today, because you can earn 1 hour of continuing education credits for just listening to today's show. So let me give you a couple of quick instructions before we start the show so that you can take advantage of that. You really just need to do two things. First, you need to check in within the first 5 minutes of the show and then check in again at the end of the show. And then after the show, you're going to forward your show reminder email to me at questions@parentstooltalk.com along with your name, and then I'll reply with the verification that you were on the call. So you can check in now two ways. You can either post a note with your name in the chat room, which is at parentstooltalk.com, or if you're calling in on the phone line, you can just hit the one key, and we'll know that you're a foster parent, and my producer, Chris Gooley, is going to note your phone number, and then he's going to monitor the chat room and the phone lines throughout the call, and at the end, you'll just do the same thing before you check out. So he should confirm with you if you do that. All right, so that's it for our foster parents who are listening, and you're our special guests for today. Our special expert guest for today is Atasha Kelly Harris, and she's going to be helping me salute all you foster and adoptive parents who are listening today, as well as everyone who isn't, because we do want to honor them today and also be a little bit aware of just what they contribute to child abuse prevention. So let me introduce Atasha right now. During her 15-year career in human services, Atasha Kelly Harris has made numerous accomplishments, both personally and professionally. Atasha received a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology from the University of Houston in 1993 and a Master's of Education degree in counseling with an emphasis in human relations from Northern Arizona University in 2001. In her service to children and families, Atasha has worked for several agencies in both Texas and Arizona, and those include the Texas Department of Protective Services, the Arizona Department of Economic Security in Child Protective Services, a private social service agency, the KC Family Programs, and most currently a private nonprofit agency, DePelchin Children's Center, where she currently works as their adoption and post-adoption program coordinator. Atasha also serves as an adjunct faculty for the Houston Community College, and throughout her career, Atasha has served on numerous field-related committees and is an associate member of the National Council on Family Relations. Atasha is an experienced trainer and a certified family life educator, as am I, and Atasha has been selected to present at several statewide conferences and has also made numerous television and radio appearances promoting adoption of foster children, which is what she's doing with us today. So Atasha also currently operates her own home-based business called KMH Consulting Group, where she works independently as a child and family services consultant. And she also has several client agencies with whom she contracts to provide a wide range of services. So she's done a great deal of work on behalf of children and families, has a really good knowledge of foster and adoptive parents, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So welcome, Atasha, and thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Anything you want to say before we kind of dive into our discussion?
Well, I'm just certainly honored to be here and certainly welcome all those foster families who are here listening, as well as all of the potential foster and adoptive families we have listening. Just want to say that it is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and we want to make our communities aware of that and what we can do to prevent child abuse.
Excellent. Now, before we dive into our discussion, Natasha, I'm going to give people some information on how they can call in with their questions, because we want this to be a live discussion, and we really want our listeners to join and participate in the live call today. In addition to talking about child abuse and prevention and the protective service system, we're also going to be offering foster parents some tips on some of the challenges that they face. So we would like to hear call-in questions about that. And our first segment is going to be on about child abuse and how the system works and just the role that foster parents play. So at the 20 and 40 minutes after the hour, that's when we stop and take a break from our interview to take your questions. If you would like to ask a question and you haven't called in already, just dial 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654. And then just press the 1 button to raise your hand to get in the call queue. You can call in that number and not raise your hand and just listen that way, or if you press the 1, it'll raise your hand and then we'll actually call on you and put you on live for your question. You can also go to the Parents Tool Talk chat room during the interview, and my producer, Chris Gooley, will take your question and then pass it on during the question section. Just go to parentstooltalk.com and click the chat button real close to the player. And I'll give you those instructions again before we start taking calls around 20 after. So let me get back to Atasha and our topic today, celebrating foster and adoptive families. Atasha, how about if you just start out by saying a few words about yourself, how you got involved in the field of child abuse and foster care, and then maybe say a few words about Child Abuse Prevention Month and how foster and adoptive parents are really integral to that cause.
Certainly. Well, I started in this field over 15 years ago, as you mentioned, coming out of school with a bachelor's in sociology and wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with it. My goal was to go into law, and at the time, a brother-in-law mentioned to me, who happened to be a probation officer, that I could work for CPS. And somehow in my undergraduate studies, I didn't learn what CPS was. And after he explained to me that that was Child Protective Services, I thought, oh, okay, well, that may be an interesting career to go into. And so I applied and got the job. Started there working for the Texas Department of Protective Services, as you mentioned, and worked there in an investigation unit. And, of course, I worked in Houston, which is the fourth largest city in the nation, doing investigations, and I realized that that was one of the hardest jobs in the world. But I managed through that. And then went on to work for child care licensing as well, another state agency that oversees child care facilities. Did some investigation work there before moving on to Arizona. Then worked for the Child Protective Services in Arizona for the state, and then branched off eventually into working for several nonprofit agencies in a variety of capacities. And my career just kind of led from one position to another and one capacity to another in all realms of child abuse, from prevention to intervention to even postvention. And then eventually, after I had my own child, decided to do some consulting work from my home and not, you know, work full-time for an agency. And then just learned even more about how the system worked and all the different organizations that do exist to help these state agencies and even nonprofit agencies work on behalf of children. As you mentioned, I've served on a number of committees that are all, their missions are all geared towards protecting children and, of course, preventing child abuse from further occurring. And so
excellent.
I've just, you know, grown to have a passion for the field and, of course, for children, my love for children and my love for families and seeing them be healthy and happy and thriving individuals is what led me to be here and caused me to stay here for so long.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that. We have a lot in common. That I also started as a caseworker in the Child Protective Service Agency, also worked there full-time for several years until I had my family, and then worked in the community, and that was my direction after working so much with parents who situations had gotten so bad that they were in the protective service system and were being referred to Children's Services, which is what we call it here in Ohio, I really, because of my background as a second-generation parent educator, I really wanted to connect with parents before things got that bad. So I started doing parenting classes, and as a result of my experience in protective service and my experience as a parent educator, my particular combination of skills and path took me down to doing trainings for not only the parents, but the caseworkers and the foster parents. And that's what I still do today, 25 years later. So both of us, listeners, have quite a bit of experience in the protective service field. And it's just interesting that both of us started out as caseworkers and both of us are now working with foster parents in similar but different kind of respect. If you could, Atasha, I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you. If you could just maybe either speak up or put the mouthpiece a little bit closer to you.
Okay, better?
Yes, that's much better. Thank you. How about if between the two of us, we kind of give a very quick, I don't want to say quick and dirty, quick and clean summary for folks. You mentioned in the beginning you heard of CPS and you didn't know what that was.
Right.
Let's just kind of do a little kind of bringing everybody up to speed so that people kind of understand what the process is. I know my experience just from kind of being out there in the community, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the system, what can be done, who gets referred. And we could spend an entire two-hour radio show probably debating, you know, what happens in the system and if it's effective or not. And that is a separate conversation we won't get into. But just to help people kind of understand the process and what role foster parents play in that, and then we'll kind of go deep and wide there in talking about foster parents.
Okay. Well, before we get into actual the process of CPS and how it operates, what I would like to do is just talk about abuse and neglect briefly, because I think one of the misconceptions that folks have in the community is what really constitutes abuse and neglect. CPS gets...
Good point.
Yeah, CPS gets hundreds of calls every day, you know, across the nation with folks calling in to report what they believe is abuse or neglect. And then when CPS does not follow up on that timely or even at all, we find that individuals in the community become frustrated because they don't understand what actually constitutes abuse or neglect. And without going into any specific definitions, what I will say is that abuse and neglect typically falls into four main categories, and those would be physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, or neglect. And each state then defines each of those four categories according to its own state statutes, and those are typically based upon minimum standards that are set forth by federal law. So when a person makes a phone call to CPS, a report, that the allegations that are made have to fall within that definition, that state's definition of what constitutes abuse or neglect for it to even be accepted. So I just want for listeners to understand that first.
Good point.
So once a report is made and then accepted by CPS, it's then assigned a priority, and that can be a level 1 through 2 or 3, and it just depends on each state. And those levels then determine how quickly CPS will respond. Typically, priority 1 would be the highest priority, and they'd have to get out there and investigate, start the investigation within 24 hours. Those are the real severe, serious reports. And all of that's based upon what the caller calls in and says, what they allege at the time of the call. CPS then goes out, makes their investigation. They talk with all the relevant parties involved, whether, you know, be the children, the parents, the school, the hospital, or medical professionals, whomever it is, to then gather all the information and determine whether or not that fits the actual definition of abuse or neglect. If it does, they take steps forward to intervene and deal with that situation. Or if it does not meet that definition, they will rule out those allegations and then close the case, possibly offer services to minimize some of those potential risks that may exist. But they will not follow up on that closed case typically any further. And that's what folks need to realize in the community, that once a case is investigated, it can be ruled out and will no longer be followed through. If it's validated or found to be true, then they take different measures. It doesn't always mean that they will remove the children from the home. Folks need to understand that as well. It means that they may establish services or provide interventions to help the family deal with the situation to keep the children in the care of their own home and of their own family. However, if the risks are great enough, they will then remove the child and place the child into foster care.
Good. And I would imagine, I know this is the case in Ohio, and I believe it's the case nationwide, which is if the option is between removal and staying in the home, unless there is clear and present danger, whether it's the immediate goal or the long-term goal is for children to stay with their families. And
certainly.
So I think sometimes, depending upon that definition of abuse or neglect, the community may think that it is bad enough that the children should be removed, but if it doesn't fit the standards that that particular state or even county within a state
mm-hmm.
has for their particular decision-making, sometimes children will stay within the home. And the belief in terms of the system is that children are best to stay with their parents unless there are these extenuating circumstances such as abuse, neglect, dependency, those kinds of things.
Certainly. And what
this
does, in my experience, is if the child is left in the home, and again, depending upon the level of risk, they will set up monitors, meaning
mm-hmm.
other family members or other community members to help monitor that placement, help CPS to even monitor the children remaining in the home. And they
mm-hmm.
may, you know, set up a safety plan with the family, let's say for 3 or 6 months or so, to make sure that all of the children's needs are being met. After that 3 or 6 months, they'll then reevaluate. If they're not being met, they'll then take further action. If they are, then they will, you know, close out the case altogether.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And likewise, permanency is always the long-term goal.
Certainly.
Whether it's permanency that the family can work out their problems, the children can remain or be returned to the home, or if they can't work those out, and the time varies, probably about 1 to 2 years is about the longest I've heard of seeking permanency, that if children are removed, that it could take that long for them to either get back home or to go into permanent care, which we're going to talk a little bit more about that.
I just want to mention, there is a federal law called the Adoption Safe Families Act that was established in 1997, which designates that time frame that parents
okay.
are given to either reunify with their children or for the state to establish permanency, a permanency goal for the child. And that time frame is 12 to 18 months.
18. Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what the top end of that was.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you for sharing that. That was very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of delve a little bit more into when CPS, which is Child Protective Services,
mm-hmm.
when that state agency becomes involved with a family and it's determined that the children do need to be removed,
mm-hmm.
that's when they go into foster care. And so let's talk a little bit about what happens with the family, what happens with the foster parents, and then that'll lead us a little bit more into the foster care piece of it.
Okay, certainly. Well, CPS, or Child Protective Services, their primary goal is just what the title says, to protect children from abuse and or neglect. They seek to promote the well-being of children by ensuring their safety, helping them to achieve permanency, as you've mentioned, as well as to strengthen the family so that they can successfully care for the children. They provide a number of methods and services through prevention and intervention to help these families regain custody of their children and to successfully raise them. As you mentioned, reunification is typically always the first goal for CPS so that children can be reunified with their birth families. That may mean mom or dad. That may mean even grandparents or aunts or uncles. But the goal is always for them to be reunified, and I want to make that clear with the listening audience, because oftentimes you'll hear folks say, children come into foster care, and then CPS gave them back, and folks don't understand why that happens. Well, it's because the goal is always reunification. We understand in this field that children thrive best when they are with their birth families. Certainly when that is not possible to happen, then they will move to seek other measures and look for other permanency options. But reunification is always the first goal. And as I mentioned, families are given typically 12 to 18 months for that to happen. What's happening during that time is that CPS has set up a safety plan with the birth family to help them regain custody. In that safety plan are certain items that are listed as to what the parents have to do to regain custody. Oftentimes the first thing is attend parenting classes to gain the effective parenting skills necessary to care for their children. It may be to habilitate themselves from drugs or alcohol if they are experiencing a problem with that. Basically to help them achieve stability, whether it mean housing, appropriate housing or employment or specific health care or what have you. That's all spelled out in the child safety plan, and the family is working toward that. At the same time, there are a series of court hearings that are taking place where CPS is having to go to court and report to the court what's happening, whether or not the parents are following through with that case plan. The attorneys are also involved at that time, as well as a number of other folks, to ensure that that's happening. When that's not happening, CPS, as I mentioned, will then look to other permanency options, which would be placement into foster care, could be long-term foster care, which we don't typically find that happening much at all these days, or it could be placement with a relative, an extended relative, maybe even out of state, or through adoption. And in order to get to that point, the parental rights have to be terminated before they can be adopted. But again, that's not until after the 12 to 18 months has expired.
Okay, very good. We're coming up on our 20 after break. So before we could, let's just wrap up this particular section on how it works. If you could just very quickly, kind of quickly name some of the various people and characters is the word that comes to mind, mm-hmm. the various different people who are involved in that process, because
right.
I know we're going to be talking about them towards the back end of the interview,
yes.
and then we'll wrap that up.
Right. Well, one thing that makes CPS such a complicated or complex system is all the parties that are involved. It's truly a team of folks who make this happen for children. And those folks include the family themselves, the birth parents, the grandparents, the aunts or uncles, anybody in that person's nuclear or extended family, and that could even include fictive kin, which would be, you know, godparents or, you know, coaches or teachers, anybody in that child's life that you know, helps them. Then there's the caseworker, the CPS caseworker and supervisor. After that, we have the different attorneys that may be involved, the parents' attorneys, the child's attorneys. We also have GALs, which are guardian ad litem. GALs, for those who don't know, are those who advocate for the legal rights of children who's been abused and neglected. They advocate for their rights in court. There's also the judges who make up the court system. Law enforcement can be involved, as well as CASAs. CASAs, for those who don't know, are court-appointed special advocates. These are folks who are voluntarily donating their time to help advocate for the emotional or physical or educational needs of these children who are involved in the legal system, and they help them to find that permanency. Also on that team of folks could be medical personnel, doctors, therapists, psychiatrists, as well as any school personnel. So anybody who's involved in that child's life in the case planning process of helping the child to establish permanency, the large team of folks who can be involved.
Absolutely. Lots of ways that we can all pitch in to support families.
Sure.
And the closing comment on that is that while involvement with CPS can be a major crisis in a family's life and can appear to be an intrusion and a negative thing, if parents can recognize that the goal really is for them to work things out and to stay together as a family and that they have all these people behind them who really mostly are willing to support. I think often parents feel like the system's out, quote, to get them, but really if they can go into it with the attitude of, you know, something did happen, it is what it is, and if I can use this opportunity to better myself as a parent and to use these services that people are offering me and helping me get in touch with, it really can end up being a positive life-changing event. And I've had quite a few parents at the end of their parenting class, you know, thank me and thank the Protective Service people for giving them that opportunity and saying, you know, they never would have had that chance if this seemingly, quote, bad thing hadn't happened.
I would certainly agree with that, Jody.
Yeah. It's a little bit after 20 after the hour, and we always like to take a quick station break for folks who may have just joined us to let them know where they are and who they're with. You are calling in and listening right now to Parents Tool Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell of the Parents Tool Shop, and today we're talking with Atasha Kelly Harris, who is an independent child and family services consultant and is president of KMH Consulting Group in Houston, Texas. And we're talking about the important roles and challenges that foster and adoptive parents play, and we're doing that in honor of Child Abuse Prevention Month. So we are available for phone calls if anybody would like to have any questions answered. This is kind of our first round of questions, and we're going to have another round around 40 after the hour. So I'd like to invite anybody that has a question to either call in or to put it into the chat. Real quick directions on how to do that. If you want to call in a question, just call 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654. You'll hear a short prompt, after which you can press the one key on your phone's keypad to show that you've raised your hand. Anyone who's listening, you can just call in and just listen, but if you have a question, you hit the one key, and that raises your hand, so to speak, so we know to call on you. If you're in the chat room, and you can get there by going to parentstooltalk.com and click on the chat room icon near the player, you can submit a question that way, and my producer, Chris Gooley, will be checking that, and we'll pass those on. So I'm going to have Chris go out and check and see if we've got any callers. While he's doing it, or actually I should say any questions. While he's doing that, let me just offer a couple of announcements here. The first is every single show that we do, we always offer some kind of a resource as a post-show resource package. This time I'm offering a collection of articles from my website. The topic is the difference between discipline and punishment and punishment and abuse, and just what constitutes child abuse. And these resources are all free. They all just deal with today's topic that we've been discussing. Now, you can try to go to the website and find those yourself. You would just click on the articles page and find them. But if you are signed up for our Parents Tool Talk mailing list, we'll send those to you along with other links. And the way that you get on that list, and what you get is you get the post-call resources, you get our notifications about upcoming shows, you get tips for downloading the recordings to your computer or how to subscribe to an RSS feed of the show. We also will give you exclusive information about future shows and parenting teleseminars, as well as discounts that are often only available to our listeners or to people on that list. So you sign up for the list. I never share your information with anybody, so you can assure that your privacy is protected there. All you have to do is just go to parentstoolshop.com/tele. That's parents with an S, tool shop, all one word, .com/TELE. And I'd also like to ask everybody listening to us today to check out one of my teleseminars that's available on the Parents Tool Shop website. It deals with the controversy surrounding corporal punishment. And in this teleseminar, I join a number of parents and a special guest in discussing what research says about the effectiveness of corporal punishment and the effective discipline tools that parents can use instead of corporal punishment. So the information in that teleseminar is geared not only towards parents but also for parent educators. So the way that you do that is you go to parentstoolshop.com/tele, same page, and this time you click on the red blinking archive link. And then that will take you over to the page, and you'll see it right there towards the top on corporal punishment. At 40 after the break, we're actually going to play a 2-minute sample of that teleseminar, and we're also going to be giving you a coupon code to get 25% off of that teleseminar, because that's our featured resource of the month. So I also will have an additional bonus article, and I'll tell you about that at the 40-minute break. So let me see. It looks like we do have a caller with a question. So let's see. Chris. You want to get our caller on the line?
Sure, Jody, I can do that. This is a caller with a phone number ending in 1563. You're on the air. Tell us your name and what's your question. Hello, 1653?
Does someone
have
the phone?
Yes.
It's Allie Wilson.
Hey, Allie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. And Outley is a foster and adoptive parent. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I do have adopted a foster child.
Yeah, actually, we've almost three of them.
Excellent.
My question is, what do you feel is the number one thing that foster parents could do to make their voices heard on like a local basis and then maybe a national basis if need be?
Now, is that directed to me, Atasha, or Jody?
Yes, Atasha, go ahead. You handle that, because actually I know that was one of the things that you wanted to talk about.
Oh, definitely. What a great question.
Yeah.
And we will get into more of this as we move along in the segment, but the one encouragement that I have to all foster parents is that you have a voice. so please use it. Oftentimes, foster families can feel intimidated by all the numbers of professionals who are involved in that team that I mentioned, and they feel like they don't have a voice or don't are not able to have input in what's happening with the life of a child, and that's certainly not true. I know that in our state, the two states that I've worked in, actually Texas and Arizona, there are a number of organizations that have been established to help address issues in the system and advocate for the needs of these children. I would highly suggest getting involved with one of those organizations in your local area, even the Foster Parent Association. There's a National Foster Parent Association that exists on a national level, but many states have their own chapters. I'm not sure what state you're in, but you may want to join that organization if you haven't already or get one started. You, along with many other foster families, probably feel the same way about wanting to have more of a voice, and I would suggest getting involved with one of those organizations to then collectively be able to help move the system along and advocate for these children's needs at a state level, national level even.
Okay, thank you very much.
Certainly.
Allie, before we mute you out, would you like to take 30 or so seconds to tell our listeners what you are doing in Ohio and what organization you started for foster parents?
Yeah, sure. We just started Ohio Cares About Youth, which is a nonprofit. We are in the very beginning baby steps of it, and we are trying to develop community and family through parenting education and community resource centers. That's what we're doing right now. That's what we're working on right now. We're setting up our webpage.
Oh, congratulations. And Allie is just a bundle of passionate energy, and it's really been exciting to see what she's been able to do to support foster parents. So I'm glad you asked a question, and I'm glad it was you, and we could get a chance to promote your organization too. So say the name of your organization once again, because I want foster parents to be looking for it later.
Okay. It's Ohio Cares About Youth, and it will be
great.
At ohiocaresaboutyouth.org.
Excellent. Thanks,
right.
Allie. We're just going to put you on mute for now, but if you do have a question later at the 40-minute mark, you can raise your hand again.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Great. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Allie, thank you for your questions. And we're going to kind of head into the second phase of our interview with Atasha. Atasha, let's talk for a quick minute about the roles that foster parents, kind of what a foster parent does. What's their role? What's their responsibilities? And then I want to spend actually more time going into some of the challenges that they face so that foster parents who are listening now or later will be able to get some practical suggestions. So how about if you share with us, what are some things that foster parents do and what is their role in the process?
Certainly. Well, first I want to just congratulate foster parents out there and just say what an awesome job you do with these children every day. We truly do appreciate all of your work and your service. You really are angels. Basically, foster parents, they're taking care of other people's children. Most of us know or have heard many people say that parenting is one of the most difficult jobs they've ever had, raising a child and training them and teaching them how to be a wonderful contributing member of society. Well, foster parents are doing that with other people's children who they don't even know the genetic history of or the genetic makeup of, and not to mention all that's taken place in that child's life before they came into care, and they've got to help care for these children. And they just do a wonderful job. They're raising these children who have histories of, as I mentioned, abuse or neglect, their reason for coming into care. And oftentimes their histories can be very complex and complicated based upon everything that they've experienced. And so foster parents have to work with these behaviors sometimes that children are exhibiting in their home and get them on the right path, you know, educationally and socially and emotionally, and they just do a wonderful job doing that. They're not only providing for their basic care needs, which is providing the food, clothes, and shelter, but they're also helping to support them in their education, in their social realm of life, as well as in their emotions, dealing with their emotions, and meeting their physical needs. One of the other things that foster parents do is help to support their connection with their birth family. I mentioned earlier that CPS's first goal is typically always reunification with the birth family. So foster parents have a great role in helping children to remain connected with that birth family, which may mean transporting children to their birth family visitations, which are typically held at the CPS office or some other local community facility, and they're helping them to establish or maintain that relationship with their birth family, their parents or their grandparents, their siblings, who may be placed in other foster homes. So they're providing that transportation on a regular basis. They're also making sure that the children remain in proper health, both physically and mentally, which may mean taking them to therapist appointments. Therapist appointments can be weekly or biweekly. Some of these children are also on psychotropic medication, so they have to meet with psychiatrists on a regular basis. Not only do they have to meet with the psychiatrist, but they have to help administer these medications. Some children can be on multiple medications throughout the day, and foster parents are having to track that and issue those medications and make sure that they are effective and monitor those, helping the psychiatrist to monitor those. They also have to work very cooperatively with all the folks that I mentioned in the earlier segment who are involved with the team, and that could be, again, the CASAS, the attorneys, the school and medical personnel, CPS caseworker, the court system. So they're doing a wide variety of activities, all for just one child. And oftentimes foster parents have way more than one child in their home. Some foster parents have up to 5 and 6 children that they're helping to raise. So they have a huge staff.
And I can think of several foster parents who are saying, oh, is that all we have, even more than that?
Exactly, especially if you include their own birth families, you know, or both.
That's right,
families.
And those that they've adopted.
Yes, exactly, and those that they've adopted.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just interject, because as you're talking, I'm thinking of a couple of families. And one thing that I always say to all foster parents, and then we've been talking about, there's one category we haven't really mentioned, and you said something that reminded me of it. First of all, I think one of the most important things that foster parents do, and they often question whether or not they're actually doing it, and that is whether or not they're making a difference,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not they're actually having any kind of influence in this child's life that child may remember later. And they are. They're not only influencing the child's life, but also the birth parents.
Right.
And often it's the foster parent who is a positive role model in that bridge between the system. You know, they kind of a part of the system, but not really, because they're directly caring for the child, and they can often be very supportive if that birth parent's open to it. You know, if it's not a hostile relationship, foster parents are very open to that and in being involved with the parent. The other thing I wanted to mention is one category we didn't quite touch on, which is dependency, which is when the parent is unable to meet the child's needs. Neglect is when the parent's there and neglects to meet their needs. Dependency is when the parent's there, they're trying to meet the child's needs. They want to meet the child's needs. They love their child. There's no abuse, but they can't. And oftentimes, you were talking about medications and children who have medical needs. Often these are medically fragile children. I do trainings all over the state of Ohio, and I always think of this one set of foster parents who have almost 8 to 10 children, and every one of them is medically fragile, and many will not live to see their 5th birthday. And so they have quite a few children that the parents are actually very involved. They visit,
mm-hmm.
but because they're in care, now the state can help pay for some of those children's care, because the parents just couldn't afford the specialty treatment and medications and all of that.
Right.
So foster parents absolutely make a huge difference in the lives of these children, even if it's an overnight stay. Sometimes that can be enough that they really make an influence and really kind of leave their mark on a family in a positive way.
I would certainly agree, Jody. In my experience as well, I've heard many birth parents also later on, after they've gotten over the initial anger about their child going to care, really learn to appreciate the system and its offer of support to them, as well as the foster parents who were able to take care of their children when they weren't able to, for whatever reason. And when that relationship between the foster parent and the birth family can be a positive one, that does wonders in the life of that child and how much they're contributing to that child's overall well-being. And so I just really want to encourage that as well for foster parents who sometimes are intimidated about working closely with the birth families and being fearful of that, because you hear that a lot with families coming in, foster families coming into the system. But when you can do that, it really does wonders in the life of that child and their emotional and psychological being, and how they're able to then thrive better knowing that you have developed a close working positive relationship with their birth parents.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we're right up on, we normally take a break at 40 after, and we're just getting ready to move into the section on what are some of the challenges that the foster parents face and offering them some practical tips. So let's actually take a break. It's maybe just a minute before 40 after the hour. Let's take our station break now. I'm going to give a couple of quick reminders again. I'll not give all the information I did before. I'll be a little bit briefer this time. But there is some new information, and I believe we do have the clip that we can play for a couple of minutes here. Atasha, get a drink, because when we come back, we're going to spend the whole rest of the show answering foster parents' questions and talking about the challenges of foster parenting and offering them some practical tips. So go get a drink of water for a minute here and take a breath. For those of you who have just joined us, I'm your host, Jody Johnston-Powell of the Parents Tool Shop, and today we're talking with Atasha Kelly-Harris, who is a foster care and adoptive specialist in Houston, Texas. And we are going to open up the lines again for our final round of questions. If you have any question at all about foster and adoptive parents, preferably, we do want to talk about the challenges that foster parents face. So if there are foster parents listening, we'd like to hear what are the challenges that you're facing, and we can get Atasha to maybe offer some suggestions. In order to call in your question, the number again is 347-205-9654, and you hit 1 on the keypad, or you can send us a question using the chat room at parentstooltalk.com. Now, while we're going to give folks a chance to call in, and I'm going to ask Chris, actually, I'd like to get a drink of water myself. So, Chris, how about if you do roll the two-minute tape of the featured resource for this month, which is the corporal punishment. Let's do that, and then I'll come back and we'll give folks some information on how they can get some of the resources today before we wrap up the last segment of our interview.
Sure, Jody. Like you said, this is a two-minute sample of the Parents Tool Shop teleseminar on the controversies surrounding corporal punishment. And what you're going to hear is a brief sample of some Q&A going on between Jody Powell and the guest for this teleseminar, who was Dr. Kirby Alvey. So here it is.
So if we could, because we're just about to the end of our half hour with you, we've said in order for parents to not use corporal punishment, they need to know other alternatives. You've mentioned a couple of things that parents can do. Can you maybe just give us a short list of some alternatives that parents can use, and then maybe we can discuss that more in the Q&A. So what do you recommend?
Well, the first thing is really to analyze situations, analyze what unwanted behaviors you're finding yourself hitting or wanting to hit your kids over. Sometimes when you do that, you can find that you can change the environment so that the kids don't engage in those unwanted behaviors in the first place. It may be something to do with the way you've organized your home, the type of situations you're putting your kids in, when you're taking them out. You really need to analyze that you may be creating situations where the kids behave in such a way that you want to hit them. So you've got to look at creating an environment that you're not going to be finding the kids engaging in unwanted behaviors. Another thing is to look at those unwanted behaviors themselves and not just focus on, you know, that he talks back to me or that they hit each other, you know, and sibling rivalry, but look at all of those unwanted behaviors in terms of what's incompatible with them. You know, if it's a problem between your two kids and they're, you know, clobbering each other, what's incompatible? Well, one of the things that's incompatible is that they get along, or that they are getting along, or that they are sharing things. And come alive during those times. You know, put more of your emphasis on what we call at CICC the do side of family rules. You know, we do talk to each other in a civil voice. We don't yell at each other. We don't hit each other. Focus on the do side when kids, because kids, all kids are also cooperative sometime, and most of them are cooperative a lot of times. So put more energy into the cooperative times. Come alive. Be spectacular with your children when they are behaving in ways that are consistent with your family rules.
And I would add to that, make sure that we teach them the skills for accomplishing what we want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, listening to Dr. Alvey and I talk on that, it reminded me, I was just at the advisory board meeting of NEPI, the National Effective Parenting Initiative, which Dr. Alvey started in, which I'm on the advisory board. And during our call just last week, he said there is a new report out now that summarizes about 30 years' worth of research on corporal punishment. It was written by Dr. Elizabeth Gershoff, and it was featured on Fox News. So I know it's been endorsed by the American Academy of Pediatrics and quite a few other national parenting and child advocacy groups in the United States. So I'll tell you what, we're going to add a link to that report and a link to the Fox News TV interview where she talks about that. We're going to add that to the post-call resources that we send to our parents' tool talk list, and we'll also give that to anybody that orders that corporal punishment teleseminar package. So I know Chris is hearing that, so he'll make sure that that is ready for you. It should be up by the time the show's over. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we do have a coupon code that you can use to get 25% off of that corporal punishment teleseminar resource package. The coupon code is RADIO409, as in April 2009, or as in the multipurpose house spray. So RADIO 409, it's RADIO, all lowercase, and the number 409. To get that, all you do is you go to parentstoolshop.com/tele, click that red blinking archive link, and then that will take you over to the archive page, and real close to the top is the corporal punishment teleseminar. Put it in your shopping cart, and when you check out, you just type RADIO 409 in the little coupon code section and hit the apply button, and you'll be all ready to go. You can load up your cart with other resources while you're there. And also, Atasha, would you like to tell them the discount that you're offering our listeners today?
Certainly. Jody mentioned earlier that I do work independently as a child and family services consultant, and I do contract with various agencies and organizations providing a wide variety of different trainings and consulting services, and I am offering a 10% discount through the month of November, which is National Adoption Month. So if there's anyone out there who'd love for me to come and train your families or your professional staff, please know that I will offer a 10% discount on all of my services again through November.
All right. Thank you so much for offering that to our listeners, Atasha.
Sure.
All right. Well, let's dive in for the rest of our time until about 5 till. We'll need to start doing wrap-up announcements and goodbyes around 5 till. But until then, let's talk about the challenges of foster parenting and some of the practical tips that we can offer parents. I know one of the things that you mentioned right off when you were talking about some of what they do is that a lot of times when parents have foster children come to them, they don't always know all the details about their past, their medical history. There's a lot of times it's a child who comes with a history, but they weren't given the history book on this child.
Exactly.
So what are some suggestions maybe that we have? Talk a little bit about what that's like and also maybe some suggestions you could offer.
Okay. Right, definitely. As you mentioned, a child comes into care, and oftentimes, depending upon how they came into care and CPS's history with that family, they don't always know what has taken place in the life of that child before they actually entered into foster care. And CPS basically takes those children, you know, from the or brings them into care from their birth families into a foster parent's home, and the CPS worker will give the foster family all that they have, and sometimes that's very minimal information. And as the child is, you know, living with this foster family, some things may come up, you know, in their behaviors or in their conversation that the foster parent just had no knowledge of. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges in this, is because foster parents will often say, well, CPS didn't tell me, or we didn't know. Well, sometimes CPS just did not know. If you believe that there's information, then ask for it. Ask them for all that you can to help understand these children's behaviors. But just know that they may not have it. You may be the person who is going to have to then teach CPS about what's going on with this child based upon what the children are reporting to you, based upon what behaviors they're displaying. You have the firsthand knowledge of what's going on in the life of that child because they're living in your care for 24/7.
Absolutely. And also, that's why foster parents usually have to go for about 30 to 40 hours worth of training. I just did a training program this past Tuesday, and it was understanding what developmental stages are and the effects of abuse and neglect. Because sometimes until a child comes into care, and the foster parent has to know what's typical behavior and what's atypical in terms of, ooh, that's a red flag that maybe this or that might have happened. Not that it means that it did, because obviously, you know, something like, I don't know, hoarding food, that's a big red flag that a child's been neglected. There may be other reasons for that, but that's one that's a real big red flag.
Right.
So they need to have, that's why we, they are one of the most highly skilled parents on the planet, because most parents, just general public parents, don't get that much training.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good point that you make there, Jody. Yeah, we didn't talk about the requirements of foster parenting, but it is required in pretty much all states that foster parents go through a series of pre-service trainings to learn about the different aspects of the child welfare system, including the developmental needs of children in care, as well as the types of behaviors that you may see displayed to help you better manage those children. And once you've become a licensed foster family, there's also then the ongoing advanced trainings that you'll get, which I know is what Jody's organization offers. Just getting into more of the challenges of foster parenting, I would say working within the large, complex system of folks that I mentioned earlier, that can become real difficult, and dealing with all the different people who you've got to work with, again, on behalf of these children, dealing with their various ideas and agendas, and helping to always keep the children's best interests at the forefront. That can become a real challenge, but I want to encourage you all to always remember what the children's best interests are and what's going to be best for them in the long term, not just, you know, today while they're in your care, but also in the long run in terms of reunifying with their birth family, if that's the case plan, or helping them to get into a permit option with a non-relative caregiver as well. So working with that team of people to help meet that child's best interests. Another challenge that foster parents often experience is not getting accurate or timely or even consistent information from all the parties. Because you've got so many people involved, the court system, you know, CPS, the CASAs, the attorneys, the doctors, or what have you, there's all this information that's out there, and it's not always accurate or it doesn't always line up with the next person's, or you're not getting it timely enough. And I just want to encourage you to talk with those who are involved, to ask questions, get on the telephone and call, even write letters if you have to, or send an email to the involved parties to find out what's going on, to keep you abreast. Also, attend the court hearings if you can. I know that, as Jody mentioned, foster parents often have multiple children in their home, up to 10 or so or what have you, and so that becomes difficult. But whenever you can attend those court hearings, if you're allowed to attend them, I would certainly encourage that so that you can remain aware of what's going on and so that you can have a voice into case planning. CPS is always monitoring that case plan to make sure the birth families are following it. If it's reunification, then if not, they've got to report to the court on a regular basis. And so you have a great wealth of information that you could add to that court report to, again, help and make sure that the decisions are made properly on behalf of that child. Another challenge is that we often hear foster parents say there's just not enough compensation for all the care that's provided. One of the things that I want to get out there today is that, you know, don't do it for the money. You know, you often hear folks say that they're doing it for the money. Well, we all know, and those of us who are in the system, that the money is nothing. You know, the compensation that they receive in turn for care for those children is, you know, very minimal compared to all that they put into the care. And just know that there are greater rewards in what you're doing to invest in the life of a child. So those are some of the challenges that I definitely have seen in working with foster parents.
Foster parents definitely don't do it for the money.
No.
No way. There's no way.
There's
and that's
not.
One of the things Allie's organization is helping with. I know they're going to have like food pantry and clothing and support, because it can take sometimes weeks to get a ticket through to be able to get money to pay for clothes. And sometimes these kids show up with a bag,
right.
If that.
If
sometimes
that.
It's the clothes on their backs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. How about if we just got about two more minutes. How about if you pick a couple of more that you think are real pretty universal challenges that we can offer, or maybe big ones that we can offer some final tips on before we start our wrap-up?
Well, as I mentioned, with the large number of people that you're working with, I'd like to just offer you the opportunity to have the mindset of working to partner with these individuals versus working against them, or if they create that adversary role with you, to try and keep the mindset of wanting to keep a positive relationship and partnering with all the individuals who are involved, and especially CPS. Your CPS case manager, can provide you with a wealth of information, and in turn, you can do the same. And you really do have a voice, and I encourage you highly to use that voice. If you can't get through the CPS worker, talk to the supervisor, talk to the program manager. Just go up the chain of command until you get to speak with someone directly about what's going on with this child. Also, you want to document what's taking place. Sometimes it may be, you know, a couple of days or what have you before you're able to talk with someone, and you may, once time passes, you may forget what's taking place. If it's a child that's displaying some behavior, who's reported some information to you, make sure that you document that with email these days. It's a wonderful tool that we have to get information there. Get the email addresses of the people on the team and email them with the significant information so that you can have a voice and input into that case plan. If it's a situation where children are looking to be reunified with their birth families, as I mentioned earlier, try your best to work closely with that birth family to help that child make a smooth transition back into that family's home. And also, in addition to that, take a break from time to time. This is hard work. Make sure you utilize the respite care services that are out there. Take care of yourself. And for those who are married, take care of your marriage. This can be very challenging work, as we're mentioning, not only for the children who are involved, but also the parents who are helping to raise these children. So make sure to take care of yourself while you're doing this. And again, you have a voice, so please use it.
Good. Excellent. We need to do our wrap-up, and I know you want to do kind of a charge or a call to action for folks. So I'm actually going to let you kick off the 5 minutes, and just if you can just maybe take a minute for that, and then I'll come back to you for the final minute for you to have some final comments.
Certainly. One of the things that folks sometimes will say is, my gosh, you know, after listening to, you know, foster parenting, I'm just not quite sure if I'm ready to do that yet, but I do want to help out in some way. I do want to contribute to preventing child abuse and to all these children who are in the foster care system, which I did not mention that statistic, but right now, for those who don't know, there are currently over 500,000 children who are in the foster care system. That is a phenomenal number, and I don't think the general community understands the significance of that or the impact it will have on our society, but there are a number of things that you can do to help address this issue. If foster parenting is not something that you're led to do right now, volunteer. Think about volunteering at a local child welfare agency. It could be the state agency in the state that you're in, or private agency, one of the nonprofits who work on behalf of these children. You can also become a CASA, which is a court-appointed special advocate, as I mentioned. It's a volunteer position, but you can have the opportunity to have a voice in the life of that child. Also, become a mentor. These children need mentors. They need a positive role model in their lives, and if you don't have the time quite to be a foster and adoptive parent right now, which we desperately need, if you just don't have that time, then think about being a mentor and dedicating a couple of hours per month to the life of this child. My charge would be that you would invest in the life of a child. They need you.
Thank you so much, Natasha. I love ending on such a positive, motivating note.
Yeah.
And want to thank you again for being our guest today to help us celebrate Child Abuse Prevention Month and the important role that foster and adoptive parents play in that process.
Certainly.
Good. Let me just do a couple quick reminders before we wrap up the call. We've only got a couple minutes left. Our featured resource this month is our teleseminar on corporal punishment. To get it, you go to parentstoolshop.com/tele. You click on the flashing red link, and then you click on the corporal punishment teleseminar. When you add that to your cart on the checkout page, you can get 25% off by entering radio409 as your coupon code. Also, if you sign up for the Parents Tool Talk list while you're at that parentstoolshop.com/tele, go ahead and sign up for the list, and then you'll get access to this month's post-call resources, information about upcoming shows, and we'll give you more tips about how to download and subscribe to RSS and that kind of thing. So it's those resources that we're going to be giving the discount link to. We're going to have some additional resources there. We're going to have that link to the special report that I just mentioned about the research on corporal punishment, some articles, and that kind of thing. Again, foster parents, if you're on and you're listening to this and you want your 1 hour of CEUs, if you're on the phone, we see that you're there, so you can go ahead at the end of the call, the end of the show, just hang up. But if you're on chat, we need for you to check in one last time and tell us that you're still here at the end of the call. And you can do that in the chat window at parentstooltalk.com. So we're kind of heading in. I think we've only got about 1 minute left. So thanks again, Natasha, for joining us today. We've really learned a lot, and I really appreciate all the time that you took out of your schedule to be with us. Any final comments? You probably just got seconds before the music starts. Maybe remind us of the discount.
Yes, certainly. Again, I'm offering a 10% discount on any training and consultation services that I can offer to your organization through November of this year, which is National Adoption Month.
Great. Thanks so much. And we'll all see you again next month when our topic will be in honor of Mother's Day on new moms and infant care. I wish you all a happy weekend and a great month. Talk to you next time.